I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity, so we saved you some time to get right to the good stuff. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Governor Phil Scott outlined his priorities for the 2020 session in his State of the State address yesterday afternoon at the State House. Early in his speech, Scott called for greater collaboration on controversial issues instead of the politics of confrontation. And at that very moment, a group of climate change activists shouted the governor down, forcing an interruption in the speech.
We meet at a time in our nation's history when too many elected officials on both sides are choosing confrontation and partisan politics over collaboration.
Well, after a 20-minute interruption, police cleared the protesters out of the House chamber, and the governor continued to make his point about his concerns about the state of politics in this country.
That's why in state houses and town halls across America, it's up to us to show that people from different backgrounds with different points of view, as we just saw, can unite around our core values and our common humanity. It's up to us to prove that listening and learning from each other is far more constructive.
During his speech, the governor outlined a number of key priority areas that he hopes to work with lawmakers on. And here today to help us understand the governor's agenda are two key members of the administration, Administration Secretary Suzanne Young and also Commerce and Community Development Secretary Lindsey Curley. Great to have you both here today.
Thank you, Bob. Pleasure to be here.
You were both in the State House chamber yesterday in the House chamber during those protests. One of the first times that there's been a recess of that length in a governor's speech. I'm just curious, your thoughts, your reaction of being there. Secretary Young, what were your thoughts as all of that was unfolding?
Well, first off, it is the people's house. And, you know, I understand the need for all voices to be heard. And the group that was there yesterday on climate change definitely had their moment to be heard. And yes, the recess was taken for about 20 minutes. And it was unfortunate that when it was time for others to be heard, you know, there was not that mutual respect in displayed in the State House. But we got through it, and it really underscored the governor's point that we all have our own ideas about how to challenge meet our demographic and other challenges, and we need to listen to each other. We need to be respectful and tolerant of other points of view. And I think he displayed that in the way he handled the protesters. And I frankly was very proud of everybody yesterday.
Secretary Curley?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the governor sent a strong message that he is willing to listen to this important conversation and, as Secretary Young mentioned, to give people an opportunity to speak their voice and to share their ideas. And, you know, I think, again, yesterday, by stepping back and giving them an opportunity to be heard, he was showing how committed he is to the conversation.
Well, in that speech yesterday, the governor once again highlighted his concerns about the impact that Vermont's demographic challenge will have on both local and state governments throughout the state. Here's why he's so concerned. Vermont's overall population is projected to decline 1 or 2% in the next 10 years. But at the same time, the number of people over 65 will increase by 50%. 50%. In only three of Vermont's 14 counties will the population increase over the next 10 years. That means in 11 counties, the population and the number of workers there will decline, in some places by as much as 10%. He referred to it as a crisis.
If we don't break this cycle, our institutions, including state and local government, won't be able to afford what they currently do or what they would like to do in the future, because costs will continue to rise much faster than our tax base can sustain. My friends, this is what a demographic crisis looks like.
Secretary Young, help our listeners understand what the implications of this demographic crisis are. Why is the governor so concerned about it? What kind of impact does it have throughout the state?
It's a crisis that has, I think, a different impact depending on where you are in the state and based on your demographics and your labor force and your workforce. But overall, it is the overarching issue behind a lot of the structural issues that we're starting to see and deal with and trying to figure out how to invest in order to maintain quality education. You look at the structures of our schools and the declining demographics of our students, and we seem to be investing a lot of money in an outdated infrastructure when we would prefer to be putting that into quality education. And we have big school buildings and smaller classrooms, and we've got to figure out how to meet that challenge. And I think it's throughout state government. I mean, you look at some of the healthcare facilities that are meeting some of their financial challenges, like Springfield Hospital and Brattleboro Retreat. Demographics of the patient population is playing out in some of those areas. You mentioned before the show, a declining demographic in healthcare providers. And then in state government, we have state government that has operated the same way, year after year, and we're trying very, very strategically to figure out where can we recreate how we do things to meet the demographic challenges that we have within our workforce and for the state and local communities around the state, and do it in a way that it's not one size fits all. What may work in one county or one community is not necessarily going to work in another community. And I think that's one of the governor's points is we have 14 counties and they're all very different and facing different challenges.
How long do you think the state has to deal with this problem before? I mean, the governor described it as a crisis. How long do we have? Is it a matter of 3, 4, 5, 6 years before we really see the impact of this?
I think we're starting to see the impacts now. And there is, and what the governor conveyed yesterday in his speech was the sense of urgency. And we have to set aside our differences, figure out where we can meet and achieve our goals of changing the trajectory of our demographics. And, I think I've heard that within maybe 7 to 8 years, and I would defer to Secretary Curley, we may be at a 1-to-1 dependency ratio. And
yeah, that's about right. I mean, I think, again, the governor is calling this a crisis because it's already affecting our daily lives. And it's impacting, as Secretary Young said, housing and education and workforce and our infrastructure. And it's going to take all of us collaborating and working together to find a solution. And in working toward those solutions, it's going to be critical that we don't add more tax burden and expense on our state's most vulnerable in the middle class.
We got this email from Rob in Lincoln, who wrote us, "I appreciate that Governor Scott has publicly recognized the demographic shifts that have occurred, are occurring, and look like will continue to occur in Vermont, especially outside of Chittenden County. However, I'm disappointed with his tone and his label of it as a demographic crisis. It's only a crisis if we continue with business as usual and believe that the only way to improve quality of life for Vermonters is through eternal population and economic growth. There has been recent research," he writes, "around the idea of shrinking SMART from Iowa State University, and I urge the governor and our legislative body to turn to this research. Just because Vermont is aging as a state and having fewer children doesn't mean that our quality of life has to suffer. The governor's tone seems to indicate the opposite. And if this is the picture that our elected leaders paint, then that's what we're going to start to see in the mirror." Secretary Young, how would you respond to Rob in Lincoln?
Thank you for your question, Rob. I think the governor's tone was optimistic. I think he's very optimistic that if we all set aside our differences, agree that we have a challenge that we all have to work to meet, that we are, in the true Vermont style, going to be able to put our heads together and find many solutions. This is not a challenge that's there's no silver bullet. It's going to have to play out in local communities, in state government, in the legislature, in every corner of our state. And so we all have to keep bringing good ideas to the table, being thoughtful, listening to those ideas, and implementing those that we think are going to help us just turn around our economy. It's very important for us to build our workforce. We have great jobs out there, and we have employers who can't find qualified workers. And it's an all-in approach, and Secretary Curley's agency has really many irons in the fire in that respect.
Secretary Curley, if the lawmakers could do one thing this session to help address this issue, what would it be?
Wow. I don't think there's just one tool in the toolbox right now. I mean, if there was, I think we would all be using it right now. I think really it's going to take several tools. And I think that, you know, it's trying to get more new workers within our state, but also pulling people off the sidelines, people who aren't working maybe because they have some barriers they need to have us help lift to get them working. We need to fill these vacant jobs so that Vermont employers can not only grow, but even sustain what they're doing at this point. I think that we can emphasize the importance of housing. We've traveled around the state, and we understand that folks are finding it, you know, difficult to find the housing that they want, the affordable housing that meets their needs. So, I mean, you know, we're proposing that we look at the existing housing stock that is run down or maybe is neglected or fallen into disrepair, and trying to incentivize people to fix that up and bring it back online so that we can add capacity and honestly do this in a coordinated way where it makes sense. We're seeing more of a demand for people to live closer to downtowns or villages. So we, you know, certainly want to help encourage, again, the improvements right there around these village centers or downtowns. But we also want to make it so that the folks in the more rural part of the state also have some positive things to look for in terms of housing. We got workforce, we got housing, you know, education and training. Again, we're really emphasizing the desire to put resources into training efforts, giving Vermonters an opportunity to upskill and find their way into jobs that pay, you know, livable wage for not only themselves but their loved ones. So there's many things that we can be doing, and I understand that, you know, we have to, you know, find some streamline here, but we've got some tools out there that we're working on, and we're seeing some results.
Let's talk to Mish, who is calling from Plainfield. Hi, Mish. Welcome to the program.
Hi, folks. Thanks very much for the valuable topic. Very quickly, some specific ideas relating to making the state more attractive to increase the number of immigrants from all over the United States and elsewhere into Vermont. Number one, think about offering grants to newcomers for such things as socially useful changes, solar panels, electric vehicles. Another, increase the availability of electric public transportation vehicles throughout the state. These are just some, and you know, raise the minimum wage because it has an enormous effect, disproportionate effect on disposable income. You know, a couple of dollars here per hour can mean a tenfold increase in disposable income. I'll be quiet now and hope that this will provoke some discussion.
Okay, Mish, we appreciate your phone call very much. Secretary Young, a number of Democratic leaders at the State House would say that increasing the state minimum wage perhaps to $12 or $13 an hour over the next couple of years and their mandatory paid family leave plan are two ways to attract young families to the state of Vermont. Do you disagree?
We have to find a number of different ways to make Vermont affordable, and definitely paid family leave is one area that we agree on, but we disagree on the approach and whether it should be a voluntary paid family leave versus the mandatory paid family leave proposed by the legislature supported by a payroll tax. But, you know, we're talking about leave and we're talking about other ways to make Vermont affordable. We don't believe that an increase in the minimum wage beyond that, what is already built into statute, is going to make a significant difference. And I think the legislative economist agrees with us on that point. I would like to pick up on the electric vehicle comment, because that's really an area that we have made many investments in over the last 2 to 3 years. Stay tuned in the budget address. We will be presenting a fuller picture of how we've invested across the state, and how if you did hear the governor's speech yesterday, this is an area he's very excited about and believes that if a small state like Vermont can make any difference, it would be through the being ready for the electric vehicle generation, which we think is just around the corner, if not already here.
So are you suggesting that the governor will expand subsidy programs for electric vehicles? I mean, right now the goal is, if I remember correctly, is to have about 50,000 or 60,000 electric vehicles by 2025. I think we're at about 10% of that number right now. Is it realistic to think that we can get to that goal?
Well, I mean, I know just in our own state fleet, we had a challenge to fill our fleet with EVs just because they were so difficult to purchase, and they're not being produced, I think, fast enough for us to fill our fleet to the extent we would like to. So I'm sure that's playing out across the state. But I think to the point of the governor's speech yesterday, I think he got most excited when he was talking about the number of different models and trucks and motorcycles that are now coming out as electric, and that is the future, and we need to be ready for it with the infrastructure, and we've got incentives now, and I wouldn't I'm not going to get in front of him with the budget, but stay tuned. But that's where we're going to maintain our strongest focus.
If I've heard any criticism of the electric vehicle subsidy program, is that the state is providing subsidies to people who probably would have done it anyway.
Well, I have seen that that criticism, and we are trying to promote the use of electric vehicles. Maybe they would have, maybe they wouldn't have, but we'll see how that has played out and look at our statistics and see who we should be targeting. And I think less expensive vehicles are being produced as well, which should open up the market to those who can't afford, the original models or the next generation.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we're looking at Governor Phil Scott's legislative priorities for the 2020 session. With us today, Commerce and Community Development Secretary Lindsey Curley and also Administration Secretary Suzanne Young. The governor mentioned yesterday his willingness to revisit how Vermont spends money on education, the roughly $1.7 billion that's currently being spent, to see if there are ways to reprioritize how this money is being allocated.
We'll also support the work of the Agency of Education to improve performance. And if you're ready, I'm still willing to have a discussion on how to direct more of our current spending to our kids, instead of letting it be consumed by the growing inefficiency of an outdated system.
Secretary Young, is this a call by the governor to say, let's go back and take a look at my ideas to perhaps increase student-teacher ratios and use some of the savings of that money for other educational programs?
I don't think so, Bob. This is the governor again saying, I'm ready to work with you when you are, to take a look at our education funding system and whether we can make changes to it so that we are investing more in quality education than an outdated infrastructure, and deal with the declining demographic and population of our students. As you know, we had this conversation during his first term in office, and there were some ideas that were put on the table that were quickly rejected. And at the beginning of this biennium last year, we put out an array of ideas the second year of his first term, and invited them to the table to discuss those ideas. And this biennium, we've said, when you are ready to have the conversation about education funding, we're ready to listen to your ideas. We're ready to have you listen to ours. I'm not sure there's going to be an appetite to do that this year. I think some folks are waiting for the results of the work of the Tax Structure Commission that's supposed to be producing a report next year. But if legislators are ready to talk about it this year, it's a good time to start the conversation as any.
We got this email from Ruth in Shoreham. Please remember that closing schools will just discourage young families from moving to or staying in the towns where they grew up, exacerbating the crises. Many of us stayed here or came here for the small schools, myself included. In our town, our school population has actually gone up 60%. Secretary Curley, as you work with people to develop economic development programs in the state of Vermont and to encourage small and medium-sized businesses to come here, what role does education play in their decision?
I think that, you know, education for a young family, you know, somebody bringing in a young family is definitely going to be important. You know, my experience is that, you know, sure, the argument about, you know, the local, you know, in your town is great. But my children attend a regional high school. And what you realize is, like, you become part of that community. So where it makes sense, I think, you know, people need to be looking at that. It's a, you know, it's a financial impact, and also want to make sure that children are getting the equitable education that they deserve. So I feel like, you know, probably I'm not the expert on this topic, but in terms of getting people to move here, I will say education is important, but we don't necessarily hear specifically, you know, where and how far apart, you know, school buildings are and whatnot is of importance in the conversation about recruitment.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Mary, who's calling from Elmore. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Bob, for taking my call. I do live in Elmore. Elmore is home to the only single-room schoolhouse in Vermont and one of only 27 in the country that's an operating one-room schoolhouse. And we're very proud of our school and of the quality of education children receive there. My concern is for when we consolidate schools and we close schools, we're not just closing a school, we're closing a community center. And as has been described by the writer, the person who wrote in the email, people are part of their communities through their schools, through their places of worship and other things, and particularly in the small towns where we don't have the enrichment, let's say, of the arts communities and that and those kinds of things. So for me, when the consideration is about closing schools, we have to think beyond the child or the children there and their education, but look to the full population of that community and how it affects everyone within that community. And I'll end my comments there and appreciate your response. Thank you.
Actually, Mary, if you're still there, I had a quick question for you.
Sure.
Are you still there? As our school population declines in many parts of the state and it becomes more and more difficult, I think you touched on this, for schools to offer a variety of different classes for folks, does there come a point where you become concerned that the school is so small that it can't offer the kinds of curriculum to the students that they need?
I think if we look at it in a siloed way, the answer would be yes. That last night I attended a talk by Hyde Erdrich, who is a renowned poet, and she is in residency at Vermont Studio Center in Johnson. Now, right up the road is Lamoille Union High School and Middle School. Why would we not want to take advantage of someone of her renown to perhaps have her do a day visit to the high school? I think that when we look at things in such a finite way and we don't see the richness around us, what really is truly available around us, and incorporate those advantages from a visiting writer, let's say, or a visiting artist, or somebody, you know, who is someone from, let's say, Vermont Public Television is doing a story with a biologist from UVM, which I just saw last week. Take it out into the streets, if you will. Take it into the schools. Invite the community in, so that that community and those students are enriched by the diversity that is already exists here, and by the fact that people come here to visit. Sometimes they come here to stay and live. Sometimes they come here to educate their children or retire here. And it exists. We're just not utilizing it to the best of our ability.
Mary, thanks very much for your phone call. Secretary Young, I know you've heard this from a lot of communities where folks feel that the school is really the centerpiece and the focus of that committee, and that closing these schools will have a very detrimental impact on those communities.
Yes, I have heard that before. And I think that it's not our goal to just shrink our footprint and close schools. Definitely what we need to do is rethink how we deliver a quality education in our current demographic climate and our current economic climate. And to that point, you know, quality education is an economic development tool. And we do have to create a school system that is attractive and affordable for anybody who may be thinking about coming here. And I'm from small town Vermont. I know Secretary Curley is. I had kids in the one-room schoolhouses, and it is on one level very sad to you know, see them go away. At the same time, as a native Vermonter, I know what our local communities are like, and I know that they are going to, you know, they are going to find a way to fill that void, and they're going to find a way to create that community center. Maybe it's not in the school or in the church, but there are going to be ways for us to continue our sense of community, because if that's sincere, it's going to continue. So the goal here is just to create a world-class education that for our students, and that's one that's equitable across the entire state. And it's going to be a challenge, but we owe it to our kids. We owe it to, you know, the state that we find a way to deliver quality education on an equitable basis in all counties and in all regions of the state.
In his speech yesterday, the governor also said he would propose a voluntary statewide after-school program, one that he says will be very good for students, and acknowledge the work schedules of many parents.
It's based on a successful model from Iceland, focused on preventing drug use as well as improving academic and social outcomes. And the evidence is clear. Kids who participate in after-school activities and programs do better in school and in life than kids who don't.
Secretary Young, how much is this program going to cost, and how will it be paid for?
Well, the governor's proposal, and he has discussed it with the leadership in the education committees at the legislature, is to take our time with this proposal and to develop it and have a universal access to after-school programming by 2025. The first step is going to be to take an inventory of what is out there. There are some schools with some very successful after-school programs, and there are schools that don't have any. But to see what works, see what doesn't work, and expanding the access will likely require some additional revenue. But he's proposing that, you know, the task force take a look at it, design the system first, estimate the cost, and then find, like we did with clean water, some dedicated source of revenue to help us fund that. And possibly, you know, that might be a good place for the regulated cannabis revenue if we get to a tax and regulate system to go.
What are the chances you think that we're going to end up with tax and regulate?
I mean, time will tell, but you know, if we do end up there, you know, this might be a good use of any revenues from there. That's not exclusively how we plan to fund it. But, you know, we're going to have to be creative and looking, like we did with clean water, to find a source. But first steps first is pulling the task force together, pulling the model together, and then seeing what it's going to cost, seeing what we've got out there that we're already paying for, and just putting a model together that's going to work, again, in all quarters. And it's not going to be one size fits all.
Secretary Curley, could you give us an overview of the state's labor force? We have a situation where we have a lot of vacancies, but we don't have qualified people to fill those vacancies, or is it a different situation altogether?
We have a bit of a mix. We have there's estimates that there is a gap of about 10,000 people. And there are arguably some folks that are right here in Vermont. And as I mentioned before, I referred to some folks that maybe needed some upskilling to meet those the demands of what the employers need for the skill set. But it also might be some people that are sitting on the sidelines who are indicating, they're sort of signaling to us that they want to work, but they might have a barrier or reason that they're unable to. And so our goal is to help get folks into the workforce and into the jobs as we can for the people that are here. But again, we don't have enough people, even of those here in our state, to fill the vacancies. And the vacancies and the jobs here, we have, I mean, we're looking for engineers. We're looking for entry level. We're looking for doctors and, you know, clinical folks. We have a variety. And so, again, you know, sometimes you'll hear the narrative that we don't have jobs, but I would disagree. We have a lot of jobs. And if you go to – we're trying to drive people to on the thinkvermont.com website. There's a jobs board, and it's, you know, pulling, scraping all the available jobs in Vermont that are posted, including what's on Vermont JobLink. And there are many jobs out there. And I want to say there's something around at least 8,000 that pop up pretty quickly when you go through that search. So jobs are here, jobs of all kinds, a variety of skill sets. And, you know, as you heard yesterday, the governor is very much in favor of bolstering our work in apprenticeships and the trades. And those are areas where people can earn a really good living. And, you know, we're putting the resources into making that better.
Let's talk to Joan in Brattleboro. Hi, Joan. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Are we still connected?
Oh, we're connected and we're happy to hear from you.
Okay. Yeah, what I called about is the health situation. A lot of hospitals are having problems. I know that there is a shortage throughout the country of doctors, and it's worse in, you know, more rural communities like this. However, my point right now is particularly about the Brattleboro retreat. I've been a patient there on an outpatient basis for several years, and they've really helped me. And particularly about 2 years ago, I had a real crisis, and they immediately took me into the hospital, although I didn't have a stent. I'm on Social Security only. And so I didn't have a stent in my pocket to be able to pay for it at the time. They took me in, and I was there for 2 weeks. It made a big difference, and I've had continuing wonderful treatment in terms of the follow-up on the outpatient basis still. And according to the Brattleboro Commons weekly newspaper on Wednesday, it seems as though whoever's a director, Mike Smith or something, it might be Social Services, I'm not sure, of the state.
Yeah, he's the secretary of the Human Services Agency.
Yeah, and what he has said is like, well, I mean, I know the retreat has had monetary problems over the years, which have all seemed to work out. But the thing statement now, it sounds like he's ready to close at least a big part of the retreat down. Now, it's the largest employer in Windham County, and which is several hundred jobs. And in terms of people and the treatment they're getting there on a regular basis, there are hundreds of us, probably maybe even more. They also, when things like Hurricane Irene happened and shut down the state, I believe it was the state hospital for people in the prisons and a number of other forms of hospitalization for psychiatric illness, the retreat immediately jumped to the need, and they immediately opened up more beds to take people in immediately, and things like
that
cost money.
Joan, thank you very much for your question, and let's see if we can get our guests to address, I think, what some of your concerns are. Secretary Young, we also got an email from Rebecca about this, very concerned about what's going to happen at the Brattleboro retreat. How will Vermonters benefit if their severely ill family members do not have access to affordable mental health care? Could you just very briefly bring us up to date on the situation there? Is it a matter of mismanagement at the Brattleboro Hospital? Is it a matter of lower census than anticipated and therefore a lack of revenue? What's the situation down there?
Well, Bob, I appreciate the caller because we all are concerned about the Brattleboro retreat, and it is not lost on any of us of the quality of care that individuals receive there and the economic driver that the retreat is within the community. But it's my understanding, and I'm not the Secretary of Human Services, but my understanding is we've made many investments in the retreat over the last few years, both in Medicaid payments and rate increases, and they have a declining population, again, like we do across the state. And I think the point here is that, again, size and structure in its, you know, its quality delivery of care does not make it immune from the demographic challenge that we're facing. So it needs to adapt, just like the rest of us, and just like what we've been talking about in this show about trying to restructure ourselves to meet this challenge. My understanding is Secretary Smith and the retreat are on a path to discussing the issues, seeking resolution, and doing everything that they can to make the retreat continue to be a successful treatment facility for your part of the state.
So you have some confidence that the retreat will be able to stay open in the future and address the needs of the region?
That's our goal, and I have great confidence that Secretary Smith is going to do what he can within reason to get us there. And we've made significant investments in the retreat, and they don't seem to be as effective as we'd like them to be, so maybe we just need to rethink how we're operating down there.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Christine, who is calling from Essex. Hi, Christine. Welcome to the program.
Hi. So I would just like to say that one of the things that might help solve the problem for the future with all the older people are getting older and they're going to double in count, that we need to get ready and have, first of all, raise the wages for nursing care, not necessarily even nurses, but nurses' aides and companions for these people so they can help be of assistance to them. I only know of one of the nursing facility home care that pays $15 an hour. All the other ones are like $10 and $12 an hour. First of all, if you raised the wage to $15, maybe even $20 an hour, younger people would be coming from out of state, filling these jobs, and that's what the governor wants, is to try to figure out how to bring people to Vermont that would be filling those jobs from out of state or even from our state. Then in the schools, or even, you know, you've got an after-school program, start training people for a job that they can do. Like, they could do something like that. I'm sure there's a lot of jobs. I mean, the only really tech center that we have in Vermont is Essex Tech. And there's not enough training in that for this area, for people who just want to be able to care for older people. So I think it's solving a lot of problems.
Let's see if we can get some solutions and some answers to the concerns that you just raised. Secretary Curley, this demographic crisis that we're seeing it really across the board. So we're going to see a huge number of teachers retire in the next 5 or 6 years in the state of Vermont. We're going to see a huge number of nurses retire during that time period. Other healthcare professionals, primary care physicians, some parts of the state are going to have a real shortage of primary care doctors because a lot of folks are going to be retiring. How does the state attract and recruit people, as Christine was saying, as this population ages, to also have more caregivers in the state's population?
Yeah, I mean, thank you for making that point. You know, it's critical that we are able to provide the care that's needed to our Vermonters as they age. And we are, again, I mentioned earlier, apprenticeships and the trades and internships. Those are areas where we are putting more resources into creating more programs and more opportunity broadly, like equitably around the state for people to access so they can get trained and upskill their own skills so that they can get the higher paying jobs. And the other thing that is really important to mention is that we're with the Secretary of State trying to make sure that the licensing procedures and reciprocity is a better or, again, a easier approach, and recognizing that folks that are certified in another state, should be certified in our own state. And so creating some consistencies there. So we're trying to attract people by making the process of transferring their skill sets from state to state much easier as well. And hopefully that will be helpful. And as I mentioned, these, bolstering the apprenticeship opportunities where people can earn while they learn. It's really critical. You know, it's hard for somebody to step away and not take a paycheck while they're learning a new skill set. So big fan of apprenticeships, and those are some areas. But, yeah, again, it's going to take some time, but those are things that we're working on.
Also, as part of his affordability agenda in his speech yesterday, the governor hinted that he'll propose a plan to reduce some tax burdens for Vermonters.
I hear from Vermonters across the state, like those traveling long distances for work out of necessity, not choice, and others, like our seniors living on fixed incomes, who struggle to fill their gas tanks and heat their homes. I simply cannot support proposals that will make things more expensive for them.
That actually was the governor talking about carbon tax or fees. As this session gets underway, there are some proposals at the State House that might do that, and he was making it very clear, Secretary Young, that that is something he's not going to support. But just in the limited time that we have left, he did hint at some tax relief in his speech yesterday. What's he got in mind?
Stay tuned, Bob. So we are just putting the final touches on the state's budget. He'll be delivering his address on the 21st, I believe. And next week is a very important moment for us in the budget building process when we get a clear view of our revenues, what we have to work with, whether we've exceeded our revenue forecast, and building our budget around that. But I can tell you that the governor is sincere in his feeling that we should not do anything that's going to increase the tax burden and the cost of living in Vermont on every Vermonter here. We want to keep the Vermonters we have, and we want to create an affordable environment for those who are trying to attract to live and work here.
We're almost out of time. Do you think the legislature this year should take a look at ways to boost the transportation fund and take into recognition that the gas tax just isn't bringing in the money that it used to?
I know that those conversations will be occurring in committee. And yes, we do need to, take a look at the ed fund, how it's doing and where we're lagging and where we may need, again, structural change. Do we need to make one in light of EVs? And so that's going to be an ongoing discussion. Whether we conclude it this year remains to be seen.
A lot of issues to keep our eye on in the coming weeks and months at the State House. Fascinating look at Governor Scott's priorities for the 2020 session. Many thanks to our guests today, Commerce and Community Development Secretary Lindsey Curley, and also Administration Secretary Suzanne Young. Thank you both very much for being on the program and taking the time to discuss these issues with us.
Well, you're welcome, Bob. Thank you.
Thank you.